Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Even on the weekends.
John Williams.
Yep, that's what we do. 24-7. We're here in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3 and Saturdays 10 to noon.
Lord have mercy.
I laugh because I've been plugging that I'm on Saturdays from 10 to noon. And I was so excited about this past Saturday's show until on Friday Elif said, John, you're not on Saturday. Dummy, it's on the schedule. We had Northwestern football. How about Northwestern football? We're going to talk a lot of sports. We'll talk some sports in a segment in the second hour today. But I am going to be on this Saturday, even though it's Thanksgiving weekend. I so enjoyed the Saturday show with the gang that I said, by golly, I'm going to work Saturday. And then the gang said, yeah, we're all taking the day off.
Now, have you looked at the schedule? Because you did this last week, too.
Yeah. Yep. 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 I'm 80% sure, which for me is, how high is that, huh? That's very high. Very high that I will be on and that I have a show on Saturday.
It's just the beginning of the week, though.
Now, this was funny. The president suggested over the weekend that the president of Finland told him that one way they minimize fires in Finland's forests is to, quote, they spend a lot of time raking and cleaning. Now, the climates of the two countries are different, and the president of Finland now says he doesn't recall saying that to Donald Trump. But Finns took to the internet over the weekend, posting photos of them raking and vacuuming their forest. Some with Raking America Great Again hats. One man posted a picture of him with a firefighter suit and a rake, and the caption read, not on my watch. The president said the California fires are, quote, a really bad one. Asked in Paradise if he was changing his views on climate now, he said, I have a strong opinion. I want great climate, close quotes. Speaking about the devastation there in Paradise, the president said, you got the audio on that, right, Elif? Hit it.
As big as they look on the tube, you don't see what's going on until you come here. And what we saw at Pleasure, what a name right now.
Paradise.
But what we just saw, we just left Pleasure.
Paradise.
For Paradise. And what we just saw at Paradise is just, it's just not acceptable.
That's a mistake that anyone can make. But it seems especially callous to not know the name of the city you're trying to comfort, especially when you took special care to misspell Adam Schiff's name over the weekend. He's the Democrat who is going to have a new Intelligence Committee position with the new Congress. Angry about Schiff's thoughts on the acting attorney general, a Trump tweet called him Little Adam S-C-H-I-T-T instead of F-F. And that one is still up there. I mean, that is still there.
Yeah, I take those down when I do that.
I do, too.
Which means he probably did it on purpose, right?
Sure. And so, literally I did this when I saw that. I imagined a keyboard, and where is the F and where is the T, right? F's over here, T. So,
they're close. They're diagonal.
That could happen. And so then you say, okay, but then you take it down when you realize, oops, I accidentally hit TT instead of FF. You get to have your cake and eat it if you take it down because you made your joke, you call them a little bleep, and then you take it down and go, oh, I'm sorry, my bad, I didn't mean to do that. When you leave it up there, it means that, in fact, you're in the sixth grade. And then Schiff said, essentially, he tweeted out like, I know you are, but what am I? So they're both kind of, you know, playing at that level, but it's the president whose official Twitter account called the incoming House Intelligence Committee chair a little bleep. And you do not get to say, oh boy, I can't believe it, or what'll happen next, or boy, that's a new low. You don't get to have that marker anymore, because tomorrow will be something else to roll your eyes at. You know who feels even worse than the two of them? It's that guy that was at Fiddler on the Roof, and towards the first intermission, he stood up and yelled out, Heil Hitler, Heil Trump. And this is at Fiddler on the Roof. There were a lot of Jews at the show. Some of them thought, oh, my God, that's somebody calling this out, and now there's going to be gunfire of some sort. People were terrified. Some people ran for the door. That guy who said that, Heil Hitler, Heil Trump, has now said, I'm sorry, I opened my mouth. It was so wrong, and I know that now. I don't know what I was thinking. I'm so ashamed. He's been identified in Baltimore. There's his name in the paper. It doesn't matter much to you or me, but he said that the musical reminded him of Trump's immigration policies. He said the comparison came out wrong. It was beyond a mistake. He's not a Trump supporter. He's not saying hooray for Trump. He's saying that this play reminds me of our new immigration policies. I feel bad about that. And so he got this little light bulb. He goes, I know. I'll compare Hitler to Trump and I'll stand up and I'll yell that. That'll be a good idea. That'll be like an awesome tweet that you could later take down. But in this case, the damage was done. And he says he feels terrible about that. He didn't mean to cause anybody any unrest. I don't know if he's married. I don't know how his wife feels about this, but somebody was sitting next to him. And if it was his spouse, she's just looking at him like, what did you just do? You dope. I did not see the story until just today, but Steve's been reporting about it, about Simeon and Nazareth. Now, that football game is interesting, isn't it? This was November the 10th, and Simeon's playing Nazareth in the 7A playoffs. It's not the championship game, but Nazareth is still in it. Nazareth beat Simeon, but it was a close game. And the reporting in the Sun-Times and Tribune, we watched Ravi's introduction of the story on Channel 7. Evidently, it was a close game. And there was a sort of controversial handling of the ball incident at the very end of the game. Simeon loses by one score, and they have the ball. And now one of the players for Nazareth is touching the ball, and the referee's got the ball. I guess the clock is ticking. They're not putting it down in time. Hey, we want to get this playoff. Time expires. This is the way it reads in the paper, and Simeon doesn't get a last chance to tie up the game, maybe win. That's sort of beside the point. The point is that on the sidelines was one of the Nazareth dads, and he was wearing an official's uniform. He is an IHSA football referee. So he put on his referee outfit and stood on the sidelines. And during the game, he was talking to the other officials. And he later on Facebook said, I did everything I could to make sure that we won and that the best team won. I'm looking at his Facebook post. It says, I did what was needed to make sure Naz won. Hokey smokes. I mean, if you and your buddies were conspiring to throw the game, or if you were just privately trying to influence the call of the officials, going, hey, Bobby was out of bounds, just so you know, I saw it there, whatever, at least keep your mouth shut about it.
Yeah, sounds like an admission to me.
You got that right, Sherlock. But he didn't say I cheated, right? This is a guy who said, no, I did. I was just making sure they got the calls right. I mean, you know what? Actually, I'm reading into that. He said, I did what was needed to make sure Naz won.
Right. Not the better team. Not that the calls were fair. That Naz won.
Yeah, it sounds pretty wrong to me.
In another comment, the father tells someone, I didn't, so I presume this is on his Facebook post, in the comment section. I didn't make one bad call. I made sure the best team won.
You weren't supposed to be calling the game.
Yep. So I said, what should happen? This is my question on Facebook, and it's my question to you right now. 312-981-7200. Text or call. The IHS, they're being sued by some Simeon parents and Simeon's booster club. They're suing the IHSA. That's the governing body for, you know, state athletics. And the IHSA sent us a message saying, we have not been formally made aware of any litigation, only heard via media reports. We will pass on participating or commenting for now, but thanks for the offer.
Get it, pass.
Pass. Hope we don't fumble the call on this one. Ho-ho! Get out of here. So they're not going to talk to us about it.
And good for them. I mean, it's understandable, right?
Well, hey, if you're Richard Mercado or Mercado, right? M-E-R-C-A-R-D-O. Mm-hmm. I've seen spelled twice, but it's Mercado, it looks like. If you're Richard Mercado and you're listening right now, call us. 312-981-7200. Dude, just your name's out there, so just give us your side of the story. If you know this guy, tell him to call. We can't get a hold of him. I'm sure he doesn't want to be got a hold of. Student sports make people crazy.
They just do.
When your kid's on that field, you are going to look back later in life, and not that much later, and go, oh, man.
Yeah, I wish every parent of a high school athlete could have a moment of how they feel 2 years after the athlete's out of high school, right? And think, oh, was it that big?
Hell, if I... and there, but for the grace, went I. I mean, no, that would be, I didn't do it. I was nutty, too. I have some moments I could share with you that I go, oh, God, did I do that? I did that. I did that, didn't I? You know, I won't even go down the road of, I wasn't nutty, but I did things that I, in retrospect, should not have said or done.
Well, we'll judge that, John. What's the worst thing you did?
I came up to an official after a game, and I said, I know the game's over. I'm not gonna say.
I'm so excited to hear this.
But I need to talk to you about that play in the seventh inning. You know, damn it, John. No. What is he going to do? Say, all right, everybody back out there. Mr. Williams said we got to replay the seventh inning. Just take it home and go to bed. I just got this text from one Joe Brand. Hey, John, it's Joe. I was at that game last Saturday. Okay, Joe. You're our guest next. All right, what does Joe say? And what do you say? What should happen? Because I think you can't go back and replay the down. You're not going to get both teams and both schools out there and say, okay, line up, have one more play, and we're going to resolve this. I think you do need to keep the perspective that even if you got screwed, it's high school sports, you'll be fine. And So I think you either need to do nothing or...
How'd you like to be the coach of Nazareth?
Replay the whole game. It looks tainted, doesn't it?
Well, to have done everything... Well, let's assume he's a wonderful person.
I'm sure he is. Most coaches are.
Right, exactly. Did everything you could, got your kids ready to play,
raised
played
these
the
nice
game
young
you could
men.
Play.
Yep.
And now he's got to defend this.
I know. What a load of crap. He doesn't want to play the game again, though. And there's no way. They've got the playoffs. So what do you do? We're watching the Dow. It's busy. Producer Elif, where's the Dow now, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 497.31 points at 24,915.91 points, John.
24.9. So we're up 200 on the year as we get closer. They always say, well, how did the Dow do that year? And it's been pretty good this year until October happened, and November's not getting any better. So we're 200 points up for the year. It's 124 on WGN. We've been talking about this Nazareth-Simeon game earlier in the month in the state high school playoff. 7A, big schools. The Roadrunners, Nazareth won 34-27. But Simeon's upset with the call or two and the fact that a guy had his official's uniform on the sideline, but he was a parent of one of the Nazareth kids, and he was talking to the refs during the game. Our Joe Brand was there. Joe, you're on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hi, John. How's it going?
What were you doing there? Were you covering it for us? I know you've been covering the high school football beat.
Not for GN. I was actually working for CN 100. We shoot the highlights for multiple games during the playoff scene, and that's the one I got assigned to, ironically.
What happened? Did you notice this? What do you think about this story?
I did not notice referee on the sideline that shouldn't have been there. I really don't think anyone did. I mean, the story just kind of coming up over the past 24 hours. So, I mean, you see a ref on the sidelines, I don't think you assume that it's somebody's father and not somebody who's supposed to be there. What I saw was a great game. It really was. There were a couple of controversial calls, though. The one that sticks out most in my mind was late in the third quarter. Simeon was trailing Nazareth after Nazareth made this huge comeback in the second quarter. And Simeon had a big sack, which looked to have been a fumble on Nazareth's quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. And the refs called the play dead, that it was just a straight sack. That would have been an easy touchdown for Simeon's defense. It would have been a huge swing in the game. That was one thing that the Simeon sideline and coaching staff was upset with. Later on in the game, there was an extra point that the referees called no good. It was just too high for our vantage point. Where we were at the press box, it looked good, but again, we can't make total sheer belief that it was good.
Were you there at the very end of the game, Joe?
I was, and that's when things got pretty tense. Simeon marched down the field, credit to their offense. They had 2 minutes to work with. They marched all the way down the field. They get to the end zone. But here's the thing, John. They were on second and goal with time ticking down, and they chose to run the ball. They went for a dive up the middle. They got stuffed. They only had a little bit of time to work a play. They could have, but you know, like some of what you said earlier in some of the reports, that's what I saw was some fumbling going around, but I also saw some Simeon players somewhat leaving the line because I think that they thought that time had expired already. Noise was going crazy. Both sides were bantering, and
if I may, though, the allegation was that the officials did not work as expeditiously as they should have to get the ball down to give Simeon one more chance. And if there's this cloud over the relationship between the father on the sideline and the officials in the game, then it just looks bad.
Well, so, but John, if I can, Joe, it sounds like the controversial calls you're talking about, though, were all instant calls on the field, not after there'd be this consultation with the nefarious quasi-referee or anything like that.
That's the thing I'm having an issue with. I mean, and if they tackle the quarterback and they call it a sack and a straight sack, ball on the ground, dead ball, not a live ball, that's not the official on the sideline making, you know, any help or any aid to the officiating crew. Same thing with the extra point. So that's where I got a little bit confused. But I would have to say that last play, it just looked odd. I mean, all ends involved. Simeon was starting to walk off. Nazareth was starting to celebrate. The ball, the clock was ticking. The ball was being bounced around, and everyone said, snap the ball, snap the ball, snap the ball, and no one did.
Joe, Ellison, my ear, we got to take a break. We might come back to this later on, and I'm on Facebook about it, too, so feel free to comment there, Joe. It'd be interesting to see what you have to say. I'm WGN King John on Facebook, and we'll come back to this topic a little later on. Really helpful, Joe. It's nice to hear your voice. Thanks for chiming in.
Likewise. Good to talk to you on a Monday.
Yeah, how about that? Joe's part of our Saturday lineup with Griffin Filipich, Domiti Pongo, and me. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline studio. Happy Monday to you. Short week for a lot of folks. We appreciate you turning in, and happy Thanksgiving week. So Pete Souza has a new book out, Shade, A Tale of Two Presidents. Before that, he published Obama, An Intimate Portrait. He, of course, the White House photographer, Barack Obama. But he was also the president, one of the president's photographers for Ronald Reagan. I did not know that. In fact, his first book was titled Unguarded Moments, Behind-the-Scenes Photographs of President Reagan. Pete Souza's third book was titled Images of Greatness, An Intimate Look at the Presidency of Ronald Reagan. I had a chance to talk to Pete Souza just before the show today, and while we obviously talked about Donald Trump and Barack Obama, that's the thrust of his Throwing Shade book, we began by talking a little bit about his being one of the photographers for Ronald Reagan.
I was not his chief photographer, but I worked as one of the official White House photographers for a little over 5 years.
Is it unusual for presidents of differing parties to have the same photographer?
Yeah, I think it's unusual. I think the circumstances were just a lot different back in the 80s.
You think? Everything was different back in the 80s. What is shade for those who don't know what the concept represents?
Well, it's throwing shade. It's providing a, I guess, snarky comment about someone in maybe not a very flattering way.
Is shade regarded in a certain light necessarily? That is, do we see that as something akin to trolling, for instance, which some people think we shouldn't do?
I think throwing shade and trolling someone is basically has the same meaning.
When did you get the idea to do this second book? Everybody was familiar, of course, with your first book.
Yeah, no, I mean, I had been doing this for a while on Instagram, but I didn't have any intention of making it into a book. But just as Trump got crazier and crazier, you know, I felt there needed to be a documentation of his first 500 days and how insane they are. I don't want people to forget all the craziness that he's done.
Describe a particular post for us. That is, so then how does that work? How do you document that, and how do you juxtapose that?
Okay, so for instance, back in, I think it was in March of 17, in a tweet, Trump accused President Obama of tapping his phones during the campaign. So I used Trump's actual tweet, including the misspelling of the word tap. And then my response is close-up pictures of Barack Obama wondering how he might have reacted to hearing the news that his successor had accused him of a high crime. I use his own tweets and or news headlines, actual news headlines. And then I compare it to the post that I made showing a photograph of President Obama.
Yeah.
On Instagram, I don't necessarily say what I'm referring to. So I sort of make people pay attention to the news. But in the book, it's very clear what I'm responding to.
There's something minimalist about that, isn't there? There's a certain poetry or beauty to how simple it is and how effective it is.
Well, I hope so. I think people have certainly caught on to my game, if you will.
Well, you seem to have a very good recall of the couple million photographs you took of Barack Obama. Literally, how do you find the photograph that matches your thought about something that the current president said or did?
In all honesty, most times I just Google it. These are pictures that we would have made public in some capacity during the 8 years. And I know they reside somewhere, either on the archive Flickr site that we had or on whitehouse.gov, or there are many other sources. So oftentimes I just know exactly what to Google because I know the photo that I want to use.
Donald Trump gives you unlimited opportunities to throw shade or make commentary. Even his supporters would find limitless opportunities to throw sunlight, if you will. It must be exhausting for you because Donald Trump, just this weekend, for instance, said and did so many remarkable things. How do you manage all of the opportunities that he presents?
Yeah, I don't think he throws much. I think you said sunshine.
I think a supporter of his would regard the opposite of what you're doing. If they wanted to do a celebratory book, somebody's going to publish Throwing Sunshine, and they're going to have beautiful pictures of him and Melania cutting a ribbon.
Yeah, but I mean, what he posts on Twitter is not sunshine. I mean, he's usually lying or bullying people. So it's I have ample opportunity to respond to things that he's tweeted out or news stories. It's limitless. He just doesn't know how to shut up.
So then how do you edit yourself? For instance, this weekend, he said that the president of Finland told him that they should be raking our forests and then we wouldn't have forest fires. Or he got the name of paradise wrong. You know, he was calling it pleasure instead of paradise.
Yeah, I know. I saw that.
So how do you
I don't have a picture. If I had a picture of President Obama raking leaves, I certainly would have posted that. But I didn't. So instead, I posted this morning a picture of him overlooking the tranquil waters of Manila Bay in the Philippines exactly 3 years ago today. And, and my response was back when our president was a little bit calmer.
You have universal use of these? Who owns the photographs?
So any of the pictures that we had made public during the administration are public domain. Anybody can use them. People can find them on, can Google them the same way I do.
I could have done this book, in other words.
Yeah, you could have done this book, but I don't think it would have looked as good as my book.
You're certainly right about that. Why is the flap jacket different than the book cover itself?
The picture of the stormy White House was the picture that I wanted on the dust jacket. But I lost out to the publisher wanted to do the one of President Obama in those rainbow shades. So the designer and I decided to just put that on the case cover.
The book itself has a beautiful picture of the White House with these really ominous dark clouds overhead. I get it. That's what you wanted it to be. The publisher said, "Lo, we're selling Obama here. That's a maybe more positive, marketable tool. So let's put Barack Obama with crazy shades on the front. throwing shade, and sell it that way. So we get to both. But if you get the book, make sure you pull the dust jacket off and look at that photo as well, because there's perfect commentary, the contrast of the two.
And also the caption of the Stormy White House, which just says Stormy. That in alone has multiple meanings.
Oh, God, that just went by me. See, you're right. Your book would be better than mine because I wasn't even thinking of the double entendre or triple entendre there.
Yeah.
Have you talked to the president about this book?
I didn't talk to him about the book until it was printed, done and printed, because I didn't want people to think that somehow he was involved. And he just kind of laughed when I told him how it was going to be formatted.
You know? And are you? I wonder if he or you worry that there's a measure of civility we need in this country, and even though the current president doesn't respect that, we all should go high when they go low. I wonder how the Obamas would feel about a project like this.
Well, I think I've gone high. I think my response is tongue-in-cheek and humorous. I don't say lies the way that Trump lies about almost everything he writes on Twitter. Mine are actually the truth, and I think I've done it in a very lighthearted way. I'm not bullying anybody.
Pete Souza's on a line, Throwing Shade, The Tale of Two Presidents. So normally a photographer is the guy behind the scenes who maybe we don't see or know that much about. It's the president and the photograph that should be the object of our attention. Now you're kind of an activist. Would you agree with that title? And is that a conscious decision you've made?
It's definitely a conscious decision I made. I didn't feel that I could not say anything or do anything. I speak from a unique voice. Having worked for both a Republican and a Democratic president. And I didn't think I could live with myself if I didn't speak out in some way. I don't necessarily consider myself an activist. I really think I'm part of the truth squad to call Trump out on the many lies that he tells every day. And I'm trying to set the record straight.
So this isn't you championing Democratic candidates or causes. This is really very personal, and it's about Donald Trump.
It's about a man who disrespects other people, who bullies other people, who disrespects the office of the presidency on a daily basis. Having spent 8 years with Barack Obama as his chief photographer, having spent 5.5 years as an official White House photographer for President Reagan, I just couldn't sit by and watch this guy do such damage to the office of the presidency and not say anything.
I support that, but I also worry that if we're ever going to be united again, efforts like this, however legitimate, are only pulling us further apart. Do you worry about that and what your role in uniting America should be?
I don't worry about that at all. I do want to unite America. But at the same time, people need to know. We can't just be immune to what this man does every day. It's unbecoming. He's ruining our reputation around the world. We're a joke to people now around the world because of Donald Trump. And I can't just, like, not do anything about it.
And yet this conversation you and I are having to some of our listeners is making them angry. They're mad that we're dissing their president. And I don't know how to get around that. I mean, talk to them for just a minute and tell them why they shouldn't take offense to this book of yours. Or maybe they should. But what would you say to those people that continue to support him?
Well, I would say that I understand why people voted for him. They thought he was going to shake up Washington. But I think they need to know that he's lying to them every day. And don't believe the things he's telling you because they're not true.
That's Pete Souza. We spoke to him just before the show today, and that's his latest book. And it's going to be in a lot of stockings and under Christmas trees. And I sure liked the book that came out last year. I considered myself lucky to be able to find three at a bookstore and bought the last three, even though the cover of it was torn because you could not get your hands on it. The book wasn't cheap. I think it was $50. We have one at my house, and we gave two as gifts. And I think it's just a great, beautiful, warm book, last year's. I got to be honest with you. I don't know how I feel about this year's. I get it. Listen, Trump's lies are maddening. I'm not sure what to do about it, but I think this is the sort of thing that doesn't bring us any closer. Yes, we need to chronicle and be aware of the lies coming out of the White House, but we also have to heal. And this book does not do that. Maybe that's not this book's job, but I just don't feel like I sure don't have the same feeling about this book as I did last year's. Some of you, though, are excited about it. 312 texted, a new anti-Trump book. I love it. And 269 said, my favorite Sousa picture is of young Jacob Philadelphia touching Obama's hair. You've seen that photo, haven't you, little boy? I'm looking forward to getting Mr. Sousa's new book. 847 said, John, throwing sunshine, that's my idea of a pro-Trump book, would be a postcard. Remember, you can call or text 312-981-7200. By the way, did you see that for the White House Press Correspondents' Dinner? It's been a disaster the last couple of years with the comedians. And so this year, the White House Press Corps has said that they're going to have a historian. I don't know if he's a funny historian. I get that you have a problem. I'm not sure that an historian... we'll see how it goes. But a historian?
Maybe Teddy Roosevelt's
called. I know, I was just going to say, far be it from me to sort of slam the potential entertainment value of a historian since I just got done doing a stage show with Teddy Roosevelt. But he's a humanities scholar. So maybe it'll go well.
And he's funny.
Yeah, he's good. ITR. It's that time of year again. And another chance for you to get something for someone who has everything. But deep down, we all want something truly meaningful for our loved ones. And so here it is. It is the 2019 Chicago Personalized Calendar. They're so adored, they continue the tradition of offering them exclusively to WGN listeners for a decade now. This year, they bring you another new series of breathtaking Chicago imagery, new pictures. Best part is your family, friends, and coworkers will experience their names realistically crafted into each scene. It's thoughtful, it's personal, and best of all, it's useful. So remember, there's this, I haven't seen this year's, but a skyline or the lake or the clouds, and the name is actually woven somehow into the image with the imagery though, of the clouds or the steelwork on a bridge or something like that. It's amazing what they can do. Here's how you get your calendar. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll to the feature section and check out all of our 2019 Chicago Personalized Calendars. Ron Chernow is the guest speaker for the White House Press Correspondents' Dinner, the Hamilton biographer, among others. So there's that. Hey, Producer Olive, where is... we did the Dow earlier. Tell me what the news click is. Over the weekend, we asked you about Governor Pritzker's salary, or Governor-elect, I guess, J.B. Pritzker's salary. It's $177,000, and 62% of you said that's about right. Some said should be more, some said it should be less. But right in the middle, 62% said we're paying him just right. We have a new news click for you.
You're loving the Bears now, right? A. Yup, we'll win the Super Bowl. B. Yup, we're going to the Super Bowl. C. Kinda, we'll make the playoffs. D. Actually, we're not a playoff team.
Well, hard to argue with. How do we not get to the Super Bowl? They just might as well just give it to us now. We're the best team ever.
Or at least better than we've been in a long time.
Kevin, your thoughts, go. No, Kevin can't talk to us. I always see Kevin in the sports studio, but he's always preparing sports for Rose Show and other responsibilities. So
very
anyway,
busy.
I know, doing sports, not sort of holding my hand here. Okay, fair enough. So that's the news click at WGNradio.com. It's on my Facebook page, too. I'm WGN, King John, on all social media. And by the way, speaking of sports, we will talk a little bit more about the weekend that was. The poor Fighting Illini, that was humiliating. The Bulls, that was even more humiliating. Villanova, really? And then thank God for the Bears. The Blackhawks, you know... we'll keep our fingers crossed, but that's not the team we used to know. Thank God for the Bears. And how many of you, if you watched the Bears game last night, when our field goal kicker lines up to kick a field goal, we're just like...
Everyone on social media, too, that was at the game kept posting, like, here we go. And then the cheers of relief.
I know. And the thing is, after we scored our first touchdown, we went for two. They were so uncertain about his ability to even make a PAT. I know it happened, but they didn't even let him kick the PAT. I thought, let him kick the PAT and kind of get his mojo back, but they didn't do that. So then when they really needed it, his first kick of any consequence at all was a field goal. I think they actually went for the two-point conversion twice. In fact, did he even kick a PAT last night? He was 3 for 3 field goals, but I think those were his only kicks. Okay, so that's the news. Click at WGNradio.com.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
All right, stand by.
Here's John Williams.
Steve, we'll do a quick edition of Handyman Poker here in a second. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3 o'clock.
Lord have mercy.
Saturdays, 10 to noon, on all social media. I'm WGN King John. Remember, our news click is at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page every day. Every now and then, Steve and I, realizing that we're utterly
Ept.
How often do you get to use the word ept?
Not often.
Every now and then it dawns on us that we really get it done over the weekend. And then we start bragging to each other. And that leads to this. Handyman Poker.
Handyman, handyman, does what Lou Manfredini can. Fixes tubes in a flash. Guess who just saved some cash? Hey there, here goes the handyman. Is he strong? Listen, bub. He's got liquid plumber blood. Here he comes, a hammering. He can duct tape anything. Hey there, here comes a handyman.
All right, so you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Well, I did clean the gutters out, you know, in some icy conditions. And I may have, and I'm not kidding, I didn't tell you this part, broken a toe putting a storm window in my storm door.
Mm-hmm.
But so Saturday, I was very energetic. It started with the medicine chest in the bathroom. You know, I went through it all, sorted everything with dated material like the 2-year-old chloroseptic and blah blah blah. Threw it all out.
Nice.
Like, I want to do that in the kitchen too. We've got all these flowers and stuff. So I went through the baking cabinet and I'm throwing all this stuff away. And there was this Tupperware container filled with what I thought were flaxseed. So I run it by Sharon, and we don't need that anymore. So down the disposal it goes.
Flaxseed.
Flaxseed.
You put it in the disposal?
Well, it's flaxseed. You know, I put it, the flour in the disposal. So the next
garbage, flour in the water and flour make paste. But keep going. This is good.
You've read ahead. This is not fair.
Well, hello. Who puts flour in the sink? But go ahead.
So the next morning, I go to use the drain, and it's clogged.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, Steve, I thought you were. These are all good things. You're just working backwards.
This is such a setup, man. Because you didn't know any of this stuff.
Go ahead. You're doing
so great. I'm talking to Sharon, and I try to the Drano. Nothing works. Can't do it. So finally, I take the trap off.
Oh, boy.
Of the sink, of the it was in the disposal sink,
yeah,
you know, drain.
That's what happens.
Shut up.
Okay, fine.
Just stop.
Is my
just
mic
stop
on?
Pretending.
I'll be quiet.
So I took the trap off, which I think is already way beyond anything you could ever do, and it was solid. It was like corkboard in my trap. Solid. And so I showed Sharon. She goes, oh, those are chia seeds. Like, does that matter? She goes, oh, yeah, chia seeds. They greatly expand in water. Who knew such a thing? So I had to take the trap off, and then one of the pipes going into the wall, and de-chia seed my sink.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I hooked it all back up, and there was no...
Everything flowed and it worked well.
No leaking whatsoever.
Okay, so to review, you're back to where you started from. I don't know that you've really made any progress. You created a problem, and then you fixed a problem. So how is that... Like, hey, I'm a handy guy.
We all in life create problems. The handy guys are the ones who can get themselves out of it.
Over the weekend, we had a bunch of plants and big urns and stuff on our deck in the back. And it was just everywhere. Pumpkins and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, so you cleaned your deck.
And so I cleaned the deck.
Wow.
And I then took all of the plant stands and I put the tarps over them and rake the leaves off the area and then hosed it down. My back deck looks great.
Did I mention?
Everything's put away. I still have the floor, I believe.
Have you swept yet? Yeah, good.
And then I cleaned it off. My deck looks great right now. It's winter ready.
Okay, well, I did all that too. I took the mums and the pumpkins. I also rewired my outdoor electrical outlet because my Malibu lights weren't working.
Did you really do that?
Yeah. I did.
What are Malibu lights? Mm-hmm.
They're like little, you know,
lights along the
sidewalk
ground.
Sidewalk lights. They're the curse, the bane of my existence because I can never get them to work.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I rewired that. Well, I rewired the outlet last weekend, but this weekend redid the fixture.
Well,
but I'm sticking with the plumbing.
All right. Okay, now it's the point of the show.
Wait, you're done, John?
Handyman. Handyman.
My favorite is texting you and Lou over the weekend. And notice how I texted Lou, but did not ask for help.
The water in the urns in the soil freezes, so you kind of got to chip the plants out. And it's not just the effort, which is maximum, but it's really the attention to detail. It's the conscientiousness that I think gets underappreciated. It's like you don't have to really do that. They'll be there in the spring, but no, we cleaned it off.
So
it looks good.
For those of you listening, chia seeds get bigger when wet.
And flour and water turns to paste.
It was really all chia seeds. It was solid, like it was like packing foam, solid in the pipes.
And what did you use to open up the pipes?
A knife.
A big old wrench or something?
No, I mean to clean out the chia seed.
Oh, yeah. The fixtures, they have nuts on them, you know, so you unscrew.
And then when you get in there, you chip it out with a knife or a screwdriver or something?
Yeah, and then you put hot water in it, but they're curved, too. So if you look too closely, you squirt yourself
Steve,
in the
face. Steve, we've really gone too long. So I think now it's time to vote. Who do you think gets the most points for having been the most handy? Steve, who went two steps forward and two steps back.
Or John,
who went one step forward, but is still one step further ahead than Steve.
Did you compost that plant material? I'm just asking.
Violetta, you get a vote.
Oh, I guess not.
Mm. It's really not a tough one for me. I'm going to go with Steve.
Elif, do you have anything to say about this segment on the radio?
I was taking listener comments, so I'm sorry. I couldn't listen.
Well, the phone lines are jammed with people that think I was more productive this weekend. Hey, look, a text has just poured in. John, I listen to you at work every day, and I just want to say that I think you are really a reasonable guy, and I'm glad you're on the air. That's nice. This goes back to our conversation we had with Pete Souza, the one-time President Obama photographer, also the Reagan photographer, whose new book is about throwing shade. John, said somebody from 815, I'm just tuning in. Can you specify what lies are being told by the president? Because he was talking about how at the end of the interview, the president isn't truthful and we need to know. I said, I'm not sure a book like this is all that helpful. It feels to me like going low when we should go high. John, how can we heal when Trump keeps on punching us? There's no respite. 847, Trump doesn't lie. He just isn't aware that when he speaks something, it's not the truth. I actually think that happens, too, and it complicates things for him.
A lot of people say that.
No, really. For instance, this thing about raking the forest of Finland, where did he get that? I'm sure he got it somewhere. Do you think he made that out of thin air? So I'm not too bent out of shape about the sweeping up the forest of Finland, and that's what we should do in America thing.
That's what you did for your deck.
Now that you mention it. And finally, 309 said, John, so is Trump lying about the economy? No. Is he lying about the thousands and thousands of jobs that people now have that they didn't have 3 years ago? No, he's not lying. Well, about that, I would say he is not.
I don't want to.
Other things he might be.
I think if you went into the specific things he was saying about the economy, you could find many untruths.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Right? You could.
Yeah. All right, let's just talk a little bit about the Bears game. That's the most important thing in Chicago today. The Bears won again. Kevin's in Sportsland. Hey, Kevin, are you over there?
Yeah, what else is there to talk about today? Nothing.
It's getting kind of old.
I know, this is boring. Like, we won another game. And yet, did you feel like the Bears, where they should have put their pedal to the metal, in fact, let the Vikings back in that game a little bit last night?
A little bit. It got closer than it probably should have, but the Bears were in control the entire game from start to finish.
What do you think of the strategy they executed on the kicking game? So after our first touchdown, they go for two. What was that, in the first quarter? They go for two after their first touchdown.
That was, the second quarter after that 18-yard touchdown pass to Anthony Miller from Mitch Trubisky.
Okay, so what about that?
I love it. You're going to see this more and more in the NFL because teams in all sports, really, are playing analytics and numbers more than ever. And if you look at the numbers, percentage-wise, when it comes to two-point conversions compared to where the extra points aren't gimmies anymore, guys. I mean, it used to be around 98% conversion. Now it's, I think, low 90s, 92, 93%. So at the end of the game, through the full stretch of a game,
yeah,
it actually is probably going to benefit you more to go for the 2-point conversion.
Right, because you only need to make the 2-point conversion 50% of the time for it to at least be even. If you make it 51% of the time,
right,
then it's better than kicking the PAT.
Right, so let's say you score 4 touchdowns and you go for 4 2-point conversions and you do about a 50% completion rate, which I think was kind of where the league is at right now. I think you're going to see that number go up a little bit more, though. Okay, so then you have 4 points. What if you get 3 for 4? Then you got 6 points compared to 4 extra points.
Or imagine
kicks.
If you score 5 touchdowns and you miss 2 of the 2-point conversions and make 3, you've come out ahead.
Look, you're seeing this in all sports, really. It's offense, offense, offense. I mean, look in the NBA, right? It used to be, whoa, don't settle for the 3-point. Let's get the efficient basket, you know, near the net.
Hey,
now Golden State flipped the script, and they literally have come out and said, we're going to shoot as many 3-pointers as possible, as often as possible. Look in baseball. They say, hey, a home run's the best hit in baseball, so try to hit it in the air. Launch angle, exit velocity. Even in hockey, I mean, Jerry Colleton comes in for the Blackhawks. He likes his high-paced, multiple scoring chances. You're seeing it in all sports, really.
I think they should do this. I think they should go for most of the time on fourth down.
Because yeah, I agree.
Because you think about that 3rd and 6 situation, right? Which maybe you're not going to convert, and then you're punting on 4th and 2.
Opens up your playbook, too.
If it's 3rd and 6 and you have 2 downs, you can run it at least once.
Look, there was a moment last week when the Packers lost to Seattle, was it? Yeah, it was 4th and 2. Okay, they're down. And it's about 4 or 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It's 4th and 2, and they're in their own territory, on their side of the 50. But I think they were at about the 40-yard line, 35-yard line. It's 4th and 2, and you have Aaron Rodgers, and you punt the ball. Mike McCarthy pretty much sealed his ticket to the unemployment line because, I mean, it was inexcusable to see something like that, to take the ball out of the hand of one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. I mean, it's just absurd.
And besides, and I think what gets lost in that, I see your point, and I'm glad you brought that up, but it's not the 4th and 2 that gets me. It's the third, whatever the third down yardage was that was necessary. Say they picked up a few, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7. Here again, just think. You don't have to think, oh boy, we've got to get it on this. We have to get it on. It enables you to be a little more conservative, if you will, on third down because you're going to have fourth down.
Right. Well, think how you think on 1st and 2nd down because you know you have a third down.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So exactly.
It extends your possession. You're going to see more fourth downs teams going forward in the NFL, and you're going to see more 2-point conversion attempts
in
the NFL.
All right. This is an interesting question.
And I think it's better for football.
And this may not be. Maybe there's not enough numbers to get a real good read on this, but we should ask producer Elif to look it up. Maybe you know off the top of your head, but I can have Elif look it up. What is the percentage of successful 2-point conversions in the NFL? What percentage of 2-point conversions in the NFL are successful?
Year to year, it's normally right around 50%.
All right, so
we can get a
you
more
don't
specific.
Know. I need the number. All right, Elif. All right, here's what I need you to look up. This is poor Elif because she doesn't really appreciate some of the nuances of professional sports. What percentage of the 2-point conversions in the NFL are successful? What percentage of 2-point conversions in the NFL are successful? Get back to us on that as quick as you can. Okay, so then the Bears win the game. So what do you think of this team right now? Not only does the offense look good, lordy, that defense. You know, they were talking about this, Justin and Steve, this morning. I don't know if that's the 85 Bears, but doggone it, that is a dominant defense that we saw last night.
It is completely stacked with talent. It's filled with guys that should be headed to the Pro Bowl.
That Hicks dude, get out of the way.
Khalil Mack gets most of the attention, but Akeem Hicks had 5 tackles for loss. He was in the backfield all game.
He is a zip code, that guy. He is just a huge place. He's unbelievable.
I always talk about the sheer volume of the man, because when you stand next to him, you feel like the smallest human on the planet. He is just so large, and he's one of the leaders on the team, John. And I think a lot of guys rally around him. And again, I know Mack gets so much attention, but Akeem Hicks is playing at an all-pro level. I mean, he was dominant last night. So, look, it's pretty clear they're a top 3 team in the NFC. There's the Saints, the Rams, and the Bears.
All right, so our news click is they don't make the playoffs. They do. They make it to the Super Bowl. They win the Super Bowl. Where are you today?
Me? They're going to go to the playoffs in my book. I believe they're definitely headed there. It's a matter of can they earn a bye at this point. Now, I'll say this, John. if you have just, you know, sort of a casual interest in Monday Night Football, this is a really good game tonight, the Chiefs and the Rams. You become a Chiefs fan tonight. Why? Because the Rams are 9-1 in the NFC. If they lose, they're 9-2. Bears are 7-3. And then the Bears host the Rams in a couple weeks. That would be on Sunday Night Football. So if the Bears can earn a top two seed, you get a bye. So root against the Rams tonight to lose.
Yeah, those are two 9-1 teams, aren't they?
Yeah. Those are two of the best teams in all of football.
No, we're the best team in all of football.
Two of the best teams in all of football. But
look at this headline. Illinois loses 63-0 to Iowa, tying a 112-year-old record. I always want Lovie Smith to do well. I don't know if it's the beard or just the fact that his name is Lovie. I don't know what it is. I don't know why I have affection for the man. And there he is now trying to make it with that middling program at the University of Illinois. What a humiliation.
Yeah, worst loss in home history for Illinois.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Let's go Cats.
Go. Yeah, I was going to say, can we talk some positive stuff here? Cats go in as the underdogs. Pat Fitzgerald says he was offended by that. They were underdogs after winning the Big Ten West. They go up to Minnesota to take care of business. They've been great.
Last two weekends, they've been the underdog. And each time they win. So Adam Hoge after the game, Dave Bennett, nice, great call this weekend. Hoge says something to him like, who do they play in their next game? Is it Illinois?
Yeah, it's Illinois to finish.
Yeah, so they play Illinois, and he says, I'm sure you'll be an underdog. He goes, yeah, go Cats. Yeah, go Cats. Watch off.
Here are the Cats right now, John. 8 straight road wins, 8 straight Big Ten road wins. They've won 14 of their last Big Ten games, 10 straight division wins in the Big Ten West. That's where Northwestern is at right now. They're going to play in their first Big Ten championship game in a couple weeks down in Indianapolis, and they're going to wait to see the winner of Michigan and Ohio State Saturday, which is a huge game.
Yeah.
At Ohio State, the winner of that game heads to the Big Ten title game to face the Cats.
By the way, producer Olaf, do you have that NFL 2-point conversion ratio yet? What is that?
60%, John.
Is that through 10 weeks, through 11 weeks?
Calculating.
She's not sure about that.
By the way, John, it was
60%. 60% in 2018, said another texter. Thank you for that.
Well, I did a little pit stop at the United Center last night before Soldier Field because I wanted to see one more shift for Eddie Olczyk. And it was Hockey Fights Cancer Night throughout the NHL, so yeah. It was fitting. You know, the Blackhawks do this thing where former players put the full uniform on and they come out and skate and they put the spotlight on them. But it was a pretty great moment at the United Center last night for Eddie's one more shift that the Blackhawks put on.
Great conversation with him this morning, too, here on WGN. Yeah. All right. Well, I just wanted to get some of your wisdom.
Go Bears!
On the
Super Bowl. They play in Atlanta this year, John, early February, in case you're wondering. Super Bowl location, Mercedes-Benz.
By the way, you know I'm a big college basketball fan.
Yeah.
And,
some games on right now, John. You can fill your whole afternoon with games today.
There's just no end to the time and attention I have for college basketball. Furman beat the defending champion Villanova, the Wildcats.
Mm-hmm.
Furman.
I know.
I believe it's the smallest school in NCAA Division I. They're like 2,700 kids in North or South Carolina. Furman, 5-0 Furman. Furman beat the defending champs.
Villanova got crushed, was it by Michigan, too?
Yes. And not only did they lose, you're right, though. It wasn't that they lost to Michigan, that could happen, but they got embarrassed by Michigan.
It's payback.
It's not their year. John Williams in the Allstate Skyline studio bragging about all the chores I got done over the weekend. Steve was doing the same. He started it. So we play handyman poker to let everybody hear us relate to you as a listener about what our weekends were like.
In my defense, I was not bragging about anything. I was talking about what a mess I got myself into. You instantly said, let's play handyman poker.
It's a fun little game to play. Producer Olaf, what are people saying? Who had the handier weekend?
Steve, 6. John, 4.
Well, even that's embarrassing.
Only 10 people are listening?
No, that you swept the deck and you've got 4 votes.
Well, you're winning anyway. What's the matter, V?
You guys don't play this as often as, you know, to be, like, considered really handy.
I'll just let that sit. She's right. People are still talking about that Simeon Nazareth game. The Illinois State High School Athletic Association, we called the IHSA and said, hey, so what's going to happen? There's a suit by some Simeon boosters. They felt that they got cheated out of the playoff 7A football game when it was discovered that one of the men dressed in officials' referee clothes on the sideline, and he is an IHSA referee, was in fact the parent of one of the Nazareth kids. Nazareth won the game by one touchdown. And he was, they say, talking to the officials during the game with his gear on. There were some controversial plays. Joe Brand from WGN Radio was there at the game. We talked to him a little while ago, and he said, yeah, there were some really controversial calls. But do we know that they conspired, that they threw the game? There's always controversial calls. And when there are, somebody's unhappy and somebody's happy. But, you know, is that evidence that they were cheating the Simeon kids? He did not say yes. I mean, how do you know? And by the way, what do you do about that? Well, they filed the suit is what they're doing about that. And Shay Allen is representing them. Shay, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show. How are you? I thought, Shay, let me try one more time. Shay, there you are. Shay, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
What happened at this game, Shay?
So, before the game, Mr. Mercado shows up in his referee uniform. He was seen by several people there speak with the crew that was actually officiating the game. Then during the game, he was on the side on Nazareth's sideline.
Let me just pause you right there. You're talking about Richard Mercado. He is the parent of one of the kids at Nazareth, and they're the team.
Yes.
They were one of the two schools in the game against Simeon. And I've looked at a picture, so you can see him on the sideline of the game. He is an IHSA official. He was not assigned to work this game, though.
Right, he was not, but for some reason he came in his uniform. So while he was there on the sideline, there's an area or a box where coaches not anyone supposed to go outside of this area. He was repeatedly seen outside of that box speaking to the refs, doing motions as though, you know, as someone that would be throwing a flag and other types of things and dealing with the referees. Then after the game, he has direct contact with a child, one of Simeon's players, and tells him that, look, you're not going to be the player of the week this week. And I basically had to do what I had to do to make sure my team won the game.
Well, he posted something along those lines over the weekend as well. From his Facebook post, he wrote literally, quote, I did what was needed to make sure Naz won. He also said that he didn't get any calls wrong, that he was correct in what he was interpreting should have been. Be clear, he wasn't making any calls, but whatever he was doing to influence the game, he felt like he was completely correct. Even if his intents were nefarious, Shay, it doesn't mean that the guys on the field were part of his deal, right? I mean, you don't have any evidence that they were conspiring against Simeon, do you?
Well, I think it's a clear inference. If he's speaking with them before the game, he's speaking with them during the game, then his comments after the game, and then the fact that his own son is playing for the team, I think all of that, when you look at it, at the totality of the circumstances, I think a reasonable person can say that he affected, along with the crew, affected the outcome of the game.
Yeah, but then the real sin here is the guys on the field, not the man on the sideline. I mean, have we heard from them? I assume the officials in the game would tell you that they were not calling it against Simeon.
I would assume they would say that, but unfortunately, I mean, as a lawyer, the way this works is, you know, usually people don't admit.
But what can you do about that? You've got a playoff system. Naz has a game this week. They play on Saturday. So how does Simeon even insert itself into the playoffs if they feel they were cheated? The kids on Nazareth didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Well, what we're asking for the game that they took from Simeon to be forfeited, and then the victory against Batavia to be forfeited and let Batavia play in a championship game. We're not asking for Simeon to be able to get back into it, but that is, and along with that, we're asking for the referees to be Mercado, as long as the crew, to all to be banned from banning refereeing ever again in Illinois.
Why did he wear a uniform to the game if he wasn't working the game?
Well, that is a good question. That is what we're trying to find an answer to. I believe that he was doing that in order to assert some type of authority and to let the other referees know, if he didn't personally know them already, that, look, I'm a referee, and so you should listen to what I'm telling you to do.
You can laugh at this, but maybe he felt like, hey, I'm just lending a helping hand. I'm another helpful set of eyes. I'm a trained official. I'll be on the field. I can help you guys out a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that's what was going on there. But
right,
don't
laugh
sounds
at that.
Good. Maybe you should represent him.
I'm trying to. I reached out to him on Facebook. Hey, listen, I got a radio station here. Richard Mercado, if you're listening, call in. I want to know. I'm sure that there's another side of the story and that he was either being sarcastic or flip and he, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I haven't heard back from him, so I can't tell. Yeah. So then what happens now? Go ahead, Shay. What's the next step then?
Right. So we've filed the initial lawsuit on Friday. We're going to get the IHSA served, and then we're going to request an injunction. So a hearing to happen this week before the game Saturday and make our request about the vacating of the victory.
And it's interesting. You are not asking that Simeon advance. Simeon lost to Nazareth, but you want Nazareth's win to be vacated.
Correct.
And then the next weekend, Nazareth went on and won their next game, right?
Yes.
And so you want that team that they beat to advance instead?
Yes, because what we would say, what we would ask for is that since that of course, that game was the victory against Simeon would be vacated, that in essence they would have forfeited the next game anyway, so Batavia would have went on without playing anyone if we would have got this done as fast as we wanted it to.
There is precedent for this sort of thing, isn't there, Shay?
Something similar has happened before, apparently, yes.
And when it has happened, they have not sided with you. They have said the decision on the field is final, and the winning team advances. And everybody, this won't be the first time somebody was unhappy with the conduct of officials or a call in a game. That's the way. That's the way it goes.
Well, I think our situation is different because this is a situation where an adult took something away from students who've been working hard to gain that. You know, in my opinion, I mean, I'm a former CPS athlete. I think that sports is a metaphor for life, and you know there are so many lessons you learn from it, and so many things we're trying to teach the students, as well as you know, if you put in hard work and you work hard, and you do everything you're supposed to, on an even playing field, you'll get the correct result, whatever that is. But in this instance, the adults came in and robbed them of that opportunity.
You know, what's really sad is that the kids from Nazareth, they don't deserve this either. They played their butts off. They thought they won the game fair and square, controversial calls notwithstanding. They didn't make the calls. They could have gone the other way. The kids from Nazareth worked hard all year long, and now there's an asterisk by their win, to say nothing of the kids from Simeon. They didn't do anything to deserve this questionable outcome. That's the real shame of it. It's the students.
It is. I think you know, all the students here suffer. And, you know, the old saying, you know, you're paid for the sins of your father. So I think that's what's happening here.
What do you mean by that?
The adults in this instance stepped in and did something wrong.
And now the kids are the ones that are suffering for it, sure.
Yes.
By the way, one of our listeners, Kevin, is an IHSA official. Hey, Kevin, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for including me. And I do agree with an awful lot of what's been said. We, as IHSA officials, we swear a Hippocratic oath that when we go to the field, we maintain charge of the field, and we call the game or the match as we see it. It's very difficult when you do have somebody on the sidelines in uniform. Sometimes you have people that are observing. Sometimes that you have officials that are doing an observation or a judging to you. So you see that, and that's kind of in your mind. But when somebody is making gestures of throwing a flag or having had a conversation prior to the match, the lead referee should have said, thank you very much, sir. but you need to exit the field
absolutely
right now.
Yeah, and then here's the thing, and then don't talk smack about it. So say you pulled the fast one and you got away with
Jeez.
It, then shut up about it. Don't go on Facebook and say and don't say I did what was needed to make sure NAS won. In another comment, I'm reading from a story at ChicagoTribune.com, this father tells someone, quote, I didn't make one bad call. I made sure the best team won.
The only match that I ever officiated and didn't make a mistake was the match that never got played. We are human beings, and you have to just let the human beings call what they see and leave it alone. And I agree, that type of comment, there's, you know, everybody has a bad day. There's something else going on with this gentleman, and I feel bad for him. And I certainly hope the IHSA board addresses his conduct.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you. Well put, Kevin. I'm glad you're listening. Just one other note from that Tribune article. Actually, this is in the Chicago Sun-Crimes today. It says, Shay Allen, that would be you, an attorney for the Simeon Alumni Association and parents, said the calls cost Simeon the game. After the game, Mercado was trolling the Simeon players on social media, making comments saying, I did that to you. Is that a quote? I mean, can you produce that? Because that's pretty awful, too, if that's true.
No, that's not a direct quote. That was a paraphrase. And in particular, what he said to one of his Simeon players is that you're not going to – a Simeon receiver was player of the week previous to the game.
Yeah.
And he told him, well, you're not going to be player of the week this week.
Right.
I mean, directly to a child.
I wasn't there, but I could see that as a compliment. Like, hey, kid, you know, you were the player last week. You know, I'm acknowledging that you're a terrific player, but not this week. You know, like with a pat on the back, not a kick in the butt. I wasn't there. I don't know how that was delivered, right?
Mm.
So I
kind of see it as a kick in the butt.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah.
Well, the whole thing seems to be untoward. I mean, something is just positively fishy about a parent of one of the NAS players in referee uniform on the sideline talking to the officials. It's amazing that that was allowed to happen. Well, we'll see what the IHSA decides. Shay Allen, any last thoughts or comments from you about this?
Well, just that. You know, as I said before, these students at Simeon, I think they sometimes during their life had to deal with some situations that are unique in their home situations and sorts. And they come to the football field and they come to practice. They do that to get discipline and to get, you know, a different perspective on life. And when something like this happens, I think it's really discouraging from them. And I'm happy to be able to stand up and speak up for him, and hopefully we can get the right result.
708 text, why did you guys wait so long to file suit? This game was on the 10th, so it's been over a week now. What was the delay about, do you know?
Well, my office was contacted, and we filed the next day. So as soon as we were contacted, we filed.
I guess it's not
really
that long.
So why the delay, I don't know.
And a little more than a week. That's not the end of the earth.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, my best to you all, Shay, and my best to the kids over at Simeon. I'm sure life is hard enough for high school kids these days, and then to have something like this happen, to put a cloud over what was a good season for the kids, it's just not right.
Yeah.
So good luck to them, and thank you for your time,
you.
Shay. You bet.
Thank you so much.
Shay Allen is an attorney in Chicago representing the boosters over at Simeon. Maybe we'll talk more about this tomorrow. I don't know if you saw Mary Schmeek's Sunday column, Oh, the Woe of the Lost Winter Glove. Has anybody lost a glove, a hat, or a scarf yet? It's early in the season. We've only had two baby snows, but I've already lost, and I try to be so diligent about it. You know, I really say, this is the year. I'm going to have a system, and when I walk in, my hat, my scarf, my glove, my coat, they're all going to go in that one spot. I'm going to be disciplined about it, and I will not lose a glove. And I had a pair of gloves to start the season and instantly lost one of them. Here's what happens. You go, okay, the glove just fell behind the dresser. Or, oops, it's in the car, but I know one's in the car, now one's in the kitchen. But I know where they are, and I've got it. I've got it. You do not got it. If you do not retrieve and put that in its special place, it will be lost. You will now have one glove, which is as useful, Mary Schmeek says, as one shoe. And she told the story. We'll talk more about this tomorrow because it's just, imagine this. The train doors are about to close on the L, and a woman has gotten off, and she realizes that she has one glove, and the other glove is on the car, and that the doors are closing, and she realizes she does not have time to retrieve it. What do you do? What do you do? Oh, crap. It's a glove. What are you going to do? You've got the one glove now. Do you know what the lady did? Did you see this? She took the glove that she has, knowing she will not physically be able to get on and retrieve the other one, and she tossed it into the train car. Better somebody have two, a useful set, than she having one. I thought, did that really happen? What a fantastic scene. Okay, that was me. We'll talk more about your lost gloves and hats, but it's just great winter-ready writing for Mary Schmeek over the weekend, and it was in the Sunday Tribune.